Braves, Bulldogs, Falcons, Yellow Jackets, Hawks, Eagles. From the heart of Georgia, it's the Bill Shank Show.
Hour number three of our show. Welcome back. Thank you very much for being with us. I'm Bill Shanks with Russell Brown. We are here talking sports, trying to come up with things worse than the New Orleans Saints. 478-646-ESPN, that is our number. We'd love to hear from you. You can talk Falcons, Saints. This situation's put us in a very bad situation. We want Dan Quinn gone. But at what cost? Even at the cost of having New Orleans beat the crap out of Atlanta? That's a hard price to pay to have the head coach depart. In a way, it's inevitable no matter what. But it can be accelerated if, in fact, they get blown out on Sunday in New Orleans. I don't know how there's a way they won't get blown out. So I think it's going to happen anyway. And if what Rick Flatford said was correct, that means that there's a chance that Dan Quinn could be fired. We'll see. 478-646-ESPN. Ken from Macon. Hey, Killer.
How you doing, Bill? I've always hated the Saints. I mean, ever since I've been a little kid back in 1966. I mean, when it first came there, I hated them. But I tell you, I hate the Florida Gators team that Georgia just beat a whole lot, and I don't like Alabama, and I don't like New England Patriots. New England Patriots.
Well, look, if you're going to hate everybody, put Auburn in there, Ken. They're next week's opponent.
Yeah, I hate them too.
There you go. See there.
But hopefully, Georgia can get the hate and get Missouri and everything, because that could be a trap game. Georgia's going to have to get rid of it. Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
You know, Clemson and Alabama has won the national championship. When is the Georgia Bulldogs going to step up and be the next one to win the national championship?
Well, you know what? Look, if the Georgia Bulldogs take care of business these next four games and they go into Atlanta against either Alabama or LSU at 11-1, I think that we're going to feel a lot better about their chances to do something special this year. I can't sit here today on November the 6th and tell you with great certainty that Georgia has a chance to be the best team in college football this year. And that means I don't know if they can beat Alabama. I don't know if they can beat LSU. I sure don't know if they can beat either one of those teams twice. I'm not sure if they can beat Ohio State or Penn State or Clemson. I think the more they win in these games in November that mean so much, the more we're going to know how confident we will be going into the SEC championship game of what their chances are. Now, look, it was a very impressive win over Florida the other day. Their defense is really, really good. They are getting better, I think, with every game. And that's what makes me feel confident that if they do well in these next four games against Missouri, Auburn, Texas A&M, and also Georgia Tech, that this is going to be a team that will have a shot because of their defense. But I think we need to see more. I don't think that one game against Florida should be the telltale sign that we should say, well, they're going to win the national championship. I'm not there yet. Do they have the pieces in place that could be, you know, in 4 weeks, a legitimate candidate? Sure. But, you know, if they run the table with these four games that left the regular season, Ken, I think there are going to be a lot of people feeling that they've got a shot against Alabama or LSU in the SEC championship game. No matter what, they're going to be underdogs. Because that's just a given. Whoever wins this weekend in Tuscaloosa will be the overwhelming favorite, probably even maybe double digit against Georgia in the championship game.
Well, how about the recruiting Georgia's been doing and all this stuff? That can't be a waste of time. I mean, you know, they had to rebuild just like the Atlanta Braves. I mean, you don't think they're there?
I don't think they're – I can't sit here today and tell you they're there. We hoped at the beginning of the year that Georgia's young players like Nolan Smith, Trayvon Walker, and even the sophomores, Adam Anderson kind of players, were going to be better in November than they were to start the season. I think we're seeing some of that, and therefore that's a good sign. But again, look, Ken, if they, I think they're going to beat the crap out of Missouri. All right, they follow that up next week with a big win on the road at Auburn, and then come back to Athens and play a Texas A&M team that I don't think is great, but it's going to be a challenge for this team. Then, yeah, you know, ask me in 3.5-4 weeks.
One other thing. In 1980, I know that's back then, Georgia almost 10. Got beat by repeat that?
I was 10.
Okay, I understand it. But they lost the game. I mean, they won the game against South Carolina. The ball went up in the air, and Georgia hadn't recovered a fumble. And they would have lost that game if they hadn't been for that. And that was one of the best teams ever. They played together as a team. But, I mean, how do you know that since they lost that game to South Carolina, that that might be the motivation?
It might.
For them to realize that they made mistakes and they can correct them and then they can go on farther and win.
Yeah.
I'm going to go run the table and win the whole thing.
Yeah, it might. Ken, thank you very much. Look, if Georgia does anything special this year, and that includes, in my opinion, winning the SEC championship game, we're going to look back on that loss to South Carolina and think, okay, well, maybe they needed that to kick it in another gear. We weren't able to see very much in the Kentucky game because it was a monsoon. So what they did against Florida the other day was important. They beat Florida easily. I know it was a 7-point game. It wasn't that close. Come on. It wasn't. If damn Matt Landers hadn't held on that run by Swift, it would have been 24-3. They might have won that game 38-10. Seriously, I really believe that. And it wasn't very close. It was a great win to bounce back and to have the kind of win they did. I said on the show last week, I said, you know, look, I want for there to be a feeling walking out of that stadium on Saturday of, all right, Georgia played really, really well. Now, we can nitpick and talk about the Matt Landers hold or something stupid. I think everybody walking out of that stadium on Saturday felt like, you know what, they played really, really well. And they needed that. They had to have that kind of performance because we didn't know after the Kentucky game. All right, great. They shut them out. That's great. Kentucky's got a damn wide receiver playing quarterback, by the way. But that's great. You know, they came out on Saturday in Jacksonville and proved something to us. They showed us something. But that is going to be a continuing test. I don't think you can sit here today and say that they can compete with LSU and Alabama. I don't. I'm sorry. If I was just seeing everything in my red and black glasses, that's probably what I would say. I think they've got to prove more. And look, we all know they go to Auburn next week and win that game against that team and that rival. And they don't have something stupid happen, like some dumbass play they'll have a poster about at Auburn for the rest of the history. Then we're going to feel a lot better about this team moving forward. You know, we are. They're better than Texas A&M. They're going to kill Georgia Tech. So next week is the big question. They do that, and we feel like they can go 10-1 after the A&M game and 11-1 again after they beat Georgia Tech, then that's a different conversation. Then maybe we do feel, or at least I, feel better about saying, damn right, you know, they can compete with Alabama and LSU. But look, I think not only the next week's Georgia-Auburn game, we're going to know a lot about what Georgia's chances are against the SEC West winner this Saturday. If those two teams come out and play a slobber knocker, just an absolute boxing match back and forth, and we feel like that those are the two best teams in the country, Georgia's got to play at a very different level to beat them probably. But we're going to know more about that. And because, look, the other day when I was driving back or when we were driving back from Jacksonville, there was kind of a split in the car about who you want to play if you're Georgia in the SEC championship game. I don't want to play LSU. And Alabama fans, George, Jim, don't call me up saying, well, you wanted Alabama if they beat the crap out of Georgia. Don't do that because right now, as of today, 11-6, I see LSU and I don't want to play them. Because I think they are better than Alabama. If Alabama wins on Saturday, that may change things. But, I mean, they've been really, really good. They've been very, very impressive. So I look at LSU and I'm like, can Georgia's defensive back stop Jamar Chase and Jefferson, and I mean, they're good, man. And can Joe Burrow, who – the most amazing thing to me about looking at mock drafts of the Falcons coming up for next year is the fact that every time I do, Joe Burrow is one or two in the draft. We'd have lost that bet last year. But look what they're doing. They're on another level of offensive production. They're ridiculous. So, anyway, it's – Georgia got back in the conversation with what they did the other day. The conversation's got to continue to grow and build with every win they have. And it doesn't start next week. It starts really this week against Missouri. You can't go and think about next week. You got these Tigers to deal with first before you deal with those other people. 478-646 ESPN is the number. Perry in Macon. Hey, Perry.
Hey, Bill. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I had a question for you. When I left work, I heard you mention Mike McCarthy's name. Is that wishful thinking on your part?
Yes.
Is that something you actually hear?
No, we just want an experienced NFL head coach, I think, Perry. That's my preference, is to have someone who's been through the wars before, and he had, 12 years with the Packers. So, I mean, no, and the only thing that's been said is that Mike McCarthy wants to be an NFL head coach again, and that he's kind of preparing for a potential opportunity, which – I mean, look, you know, every year there's going to be a certain number of head coaching positions available, and we assume and pray to God that Atlanta will be one of them. So what do you think about McCarthy? Would you like him if he were the pick?
Yeah, I would love to have McCarthy. I like him at Green Bay. I think he'd be an excellent head coach.
Yeah, well, I do too. Yeah. Like we said earlier, I'm sure a Packer fan can sit here and nitpick and tell us things about McCarthy they didn't like over that amount of time. But, I mean, he was successful. He was really good.
Yeah, I was pleased with him. I would love to have him. He'd be a whole lot better than what we got now, that's for sure.
It wouldn't take much, Perry.
I guarantee you. All right, Bill, have a good day.
All right, man, thank you very much. Good to hear from you. I can't believe. Russ, we've been on the show 12 and a half years. I can't believe we're in another situation where we're wanting a coaching change. It's like, good grief, you know. I mean, it's just always something with this damn team.
Yeah, well, I didn't, you know, the shelf life for a coach in the NFL is, 4 or 5 years? Give or take. So,
pretty much, yeah.
I mean, we're on pace. You know, this would be, what do we go from Moore to Petrino? Well, no, Petrino. Petrino to Smith to Quinn. So, yeah, we're this will be the fourth one in 12 years, so we're kind of on pace. But I just hope... I hope they find the guy. And let me ask you this, and this won't happen. Would you take Mike Smith back?
Ooh. That's a great question. Wow.
And I'm not saying that's who I want, and I'm not saying they should do that, but I want to find a guy that I look back on as fondly as I do Mike Smith.
Yeah. I probably wouldn't, because I think – I wasn't convinced Mike Smith needed to be fired. I thought Mike Smith may have hit a wall, and I think he did. I think it, like you're saying about, you know, the 10 years of a coach, Mike had 8 years?
Mm-hmm.
He probably reached his limit, especially for someone who had not won a Super Bowl, right? I mean, that's just kind of part of the game. But I liked Mike a lot, and I hated when he was gone. I did not think he got treated very well by the ownership of this team. Not that he was fired, but I just think there was some I didn't like some things I heard about it. But I probably wouldn't take him back, but I think that's a good way to put it. Is, I mean, Dan Quinn got to a Super Bowl, right? Mike Smith didn't. 20 years from now, who are we going to think was a better coach for the Atlanta Falcons? There ain't no doubt about it. I mean, they had never had a back-to-back winning season in their history.
Right.
Until Mike Smith took over that team. And that happened in year one and two, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think Mike's retired. I mean, you know, he was, he's backed away. But still, the point is, I think your point is right in that give us someone who in 15 years, we're going to look back on their era of Falcons football and say, man, that was a really, really good hire. But Russ, that's where the experience factor versus non-experience comes into play. You want to talk about a shot in the dark? I mean, maybe Kellen Moore is the next great coach in the NFL. He's 30. Can you afford that gamble right now with the situation you're in, or do you have to go get someone with experience who's been through this? And how about the respect factor that was mentioned earlier?
Yeah.
I mean, these players don't know who the hell Kellen Moore is.
Oh, no,
they know who
no.
Mike McCarthy is.
Right. That's a great point, too. There's no question about it. And if you do go the Kellen Moore route, you're going to have veteran coaches on the staff. You're going to have a veteran general manager picking the players. And the part about the locker room, really, I think that drives home the need to bring in an accomplished head coach from the National Football League, because it doesn't sound like there's a lot of respect going on in that locker room right now. Mm-hmm. But I just have a feeling if Mike McCarthy, to use an example, walked into that locker room, then they'll respect that because he's had success as a head coach in the league. And I don't think he preaches, you know, brotherhood and kumbaya.
Oh, no.
Say that stuff for high school and college.
I'm tailgating on Saturday with someone in Athens who's a big Packers fan. I'm going to get the scoop about McCarthy.
Yeah.
I'm going to get the scoop about him because he's a huge Packer fan. He loves Packers. And again, look, he was there for 12 years. He won only one Super Bowl, and I say only one because Packers feel like they should win it every year, which is good. They should feel that way. That should be every team's thought. You know, we're just trying to get in out of September if we're Falcons fans, for crying out loud. But I want to hear more about McCarthy. But the respect factor in this equation is important. Dan Quinn followed Mike Smith, and both were first-time head coaches. I didn't think it was right to hire Quinn after Smith because of that. You know what, Russ? We didn't really care who it was when Mike Smith was. We didn't know who Mike Smith was. Well, we didn't care who it was because of what we had been through in 2007, right? We mm-hmm. didn't care. Whoever. Look, we're almost at that point now with Quinn. I don't give a damn who you bring in. Just bring somebody in. But then Quinn, it was like, all right, aren't you going down this road, Arthur, with a first-time head coach? Why do it again? Why give him $5 million a year? Why give him that much power? That didn't make any sense to me. But I just don't see how anybody can look at this situation and think they can do anything but bring in someone with previous head coaching experience, which is something he's never had. Never. He's had first-time guy with Jim Mora, college coach with Bobby Petrino, first-time coach with Mike Smith, first-time coach. I mean, Mike Smith and Dan Quinn have never been a head coach in their career, their lives. And Dan and Arthur Blank gave him the keys to Kenny's store. Well, it didn't work, you know? Now that, if that anything points to what you should do now, Arthur, it's the fact that when you went down those roads, it didn't work out with your ultimate goal, which is to win a Super Bowl. So go get someone who's got experience. But who else besides McCarthy, Russ? I mean, people were saying the other day about Jason Garrett, and I don't know about that. That doesn't really get me going very much about if Dallas fires Jason Garrett, which I think he's got pictures of Jerry with somebody.
He might.
You know, but he's been there for a long time. But, I mean, I don't really. But the perfect thing about McCarthy is he's on the sidelines. He's not someone. And, you know, Del Rio's kind of the same way. I mean, I like Jack Del Rio. I think he thought he did a good job in Jacksonville. He got the shaft in Oakland. We know that. And he. I wouldn't be surprised if they interview him, if they're going to go down the road that we want him to go down with an experienced coach. But you know what? And like George Remake was saying earlier, if someone like Louis Riddick is brought in to make the decision, who knows what Louis Riddick's going to want to do?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows?
Yeah, because he's going to have sort of his own philosophy or his own thought process on exactly what that should be. And, you know, when you talk, I don't want to hire a coach that's been fired, like, immediately either. Like, McCarthy's been out of the game for a year, so he's probably refreshed. Now, I know that's getting real nitpicky, but I don't know. It's just all the names that keep coming up, I don't really feel great about a lot of them. McCarthy, that may end up being the one for me as this thing rolls along. The Harbaugh stuff, you know, I buy into that. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what they do. But I tell you, George called earlier with that Louis Riddick suggestion, and I've been saying all along I want a front office guy. That may be the one for me.
Oh, he is. He's good.
And then just whoever he hires, I'll be fired up about.
How many years has George been calling the show? He finally had a good call.
Wow. George always has a good call.
I'm just kidding him. I'm just kidding him. Hell, you know why? Because he's an Alabama fan.
He is?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Supposedly. By the way, Joe from Warner Robins needs help.
What is he? Is he tweeting about Trey Young?
He just tweeted at me, at Bill Shanks. Bleacher Report indicates Braves are pursuing Madison Bumgarner.
Wow.
Possibly old news.
Breaking news.
3:40.
Has he heard that Freddie Gonzalez got fired yet?
Probably about 20 minutes.
Joe, you're late, dude. Come on, dude.
Again.
Joe's like wanting more promo time or something.
Yeah, I guess so.
Thanks, Joe. We appreciate it. Tell us something's going to happen before it actually has happened, like 2 hours ago. All right, 478-646 ESPN. Your thoughts on the Falcons, on the situation with the coach? Oh, I just got info on a scoop on the Green Bay situation with McCarthy. We're going to take a break. Come back. You know, the guy I told you was going to tailgate with.
Yeah,
he had just text me, wanting to know what he could bring the tailgate on Saturday. He asks me that every time. He never brings anything. All my friends have clots in their wallets. It's unbelievable. It makes me sick. I'll tell you what he said about Mike McCarthy. We'd love to hear your thoughts. 478-646 ESPN. And finish the sentence. The blank is worse than the New Orleans Saints. Flesh-eating disease. I can't stand them. They're awful. Back with more on this Wednesday right after this.
Now, back to the Bill Shank Show on Middle Georgia's ESPN.
A lot of pressure for Arthur Blank to have the right choice as the head coach. I got the Green Bay Packers fan to answer my question. Did you like Mike McCarthy? And he wrote back, I did. He knew what he was doing on offense. The issue was him and Rodgers would butt heads a lot. McCarthy was never the issue, though. It was always defense. Hope he gets a job somewhere. Well, how do you interpret that, Russ? Pretty positive.
Yeah, no, I think so. And as an offensive head coach, how much of the defense being a problem was his problem? I guess that would be the only question I would have. But, the defense is a problem already, so there's nowhere to go but up on that side of the ball for the Falcons. I like it. And when he says knows what he's doing on offense, if you finally get the right guy in here for Matt Ryan and Julio Jones, I mean, I just feel like that tandem, if you will, has been wasted because we always end up with these offensive coordinators like Dirk Cutter that go away from the run game. And, I mean, could you imagine if the Falcons had a running game that people had to really respect and worry about, how much easier it would be for these receivers to get open?
Mm-hmm. I agree. I was looking at McCarthy's resume. Packers 2006 or 2018. That's 13 years. Won the Super Bowl in year 5. Then lost in the divisional game 2 years in a row. Lost the championship game 2 other years, including to Atlanta in 2016. Last 2 years after the Falcons beat him, he went a total of 11-16-1, and got fired in that last year. So he had previously been the offensive coordinator with the San Francisco 49ers. Before that, he worked for the enemy as the OC from 2000 to 2004. Packers, 99, quarterbacks coach, Chiefs before that, Chiefs, wide receivers coach of Pittsburgh, the Steelers in 92, a graduate assistant with University of Pittsburgh in 1989 and 91, played at Baker. What the hell is Baker? Graduated in 1987. He's 55 years old from Pittsburgh. But let me tell you that. Hold on. Hold the phone. Russ, you know, another coach that could be fired at the end of this year is Mike Tomlin.
Mm-hmm.
Mike McCarthy's not going to want to come to Atlanta. Mike Tomlin might get fired. He's going to go to Pittsburgh, isn't he? Wow, that's something. That's interesting right there.
And that goes back to also to something Rick Flatford said earlier about, you know, with the Falcons, with that cap situation, whoever does take over this job, there's not a whole lot they can do personnel-wise year one. And now I don't know what Pittsburgh's situation is. Both teams have older quarterbacks, so you have to think about that, too.
Theirs are older than ours.
So, you know, he's going to want a guy, you know, and I don't know. It's like for an offensive coach, would you rather have Matt Ryan or Ben Roethlisberger right now? That may actually be
right.
Atlanta advantage Atlanta, but then again, you know, the Steelers may be ready to start looking for that replacement, that contingency plan on Big Ben. And maybe he would like to kind of, you know, pick a quarterback, because it's a great draft class for quarterbacks. Maybe he'd like to pick that quarterback and develop kind of his guy, if you will, moving forward. So it's, but I do think off the, yeah, I do think that the Steelers have right now 7.9 in cap space. So it's not much better than the Falcons. Well, $16 million better, but only 8 of which you can spend because the Falcons are over the cap. But yeah, Pittsburgh probably would be more attractive.
But if you're a coach out there looking at running an offense, the Ryan and Julio combo's got to carry some weight, doesn't it?
I absolutely. I think it does. And running back's an issue, but you can find a running back. I think, you know, the key to the whole thing, maybe, what do these guys think of McGarry and Lidstrom, the two rookie linemen? Because if they think those guys are hits and you've got Jake Matthews, that's three. Maybe you can squeeze one more year out of Alex Mack, that's four. So that's going to make it easier to rebuild what you need to prepare on the offense. I also think Calvin Ridley and Russell Gage are great complements to him as well. I mean, we know that the Falcons have always had receivers. We know that. It's just, I think if you bring in an offensive-minded head coach, they're going to understand the importance of an offensive line a little bit better. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I would like to see that.
Here's a name I just saw, and he's working for the enemy now, but I'll mention it anyway. Mike Nolan. Doesn't get you going, huh?
No.
I didn't realize he was in his third season for the enemy. Here's another enemy coach that's done. Jim Haslett's no longer coaching in the NFL. How about that?
Jimmy Haslett.
Jimmy.
That ain't going to work no.
He got fired in Cincinnati. He's not working this year. How about
wow.
that?
Wow.
Yeah.
One of Spurrier that said, I ain't going to work no 16 hours like that Jimmy Haslett.
That's right. I saw Spurrier the other day in the press box.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. He didn't say hey to me.
He didn't. I figured he'd be telling anybody that would listen about that AAF championship. They got rings. I love him.
You know, it's funny because I was walking down the hall, and I heard him. Just like how you're doing that. Yeah. Hey, Bianchi, come here. I got to tell you something about this game right here.
He's great.
He's hilarious.
When he said, when that interview, that is one of my all-time favorite Steve Spurrier moments, and it's recent. Well, yep, fold up league. We got the most wins, so guess we're the champs. That was awesome.
It was pretty good. I have to admit it. Yeah, he was talking to Mike Bianchi, one of the columnists in Orlando, and I don't know who else is there. But it was funny. It was like, you know, he's got to miss a little bit. And what, his grandson's at Duke, isn't that right?
Oh, is that right?
I think his grandson's playing for Duke. For
the wow, Dukes. How about that?
I think he was on the sideline a little bit earlier this year in a game for the Dukies. By the way, Cam Reddish is available tonight against the Bulls.
Well, that's good.
Good. He had a shoulder issue. And you know, he did well last night, kind of picking up more slack. And I think they're going to turn to him a little bit more now with John Collins out. I may be wrong, but I wouldn't be surprised. By the way, now Joe's being a smart aleck. Here's a tip from Charlie Sheen, Blue Star Aviation. All right, that was funny. I don't care who you are. J-Rad says, the Gators and the Tide and Auburn are worse than the Saints. No, they aren't. Come on, dude. Really? No. I know they're bad. I know you're a Georgia fan. That's fine. But, I mean, I'm a Georgia fan, and Tennessee, Auburn, Florida right there, same boat, right? I mean, okay, I get it. And Georgia, I love Georgia more than I love the Falcons. But I'm telling you, the team I love to hate the most, it ain't close. I mean, I used to hate the Dodgers really, really bad. I used to hate, capital letters in bold, Times New Roman, hate the Dodgers. Hate Tommy Lasorda. But I don't anymore. I really don't. I don't like the Mets. If you had to pick a baseball team you hate the most, is it the Mets or the Nationals or the Phillies? Which one?
Mets.
Yeah. I mean, you got to hate the Mets, right? Yeah. Although the Cardinals may be right there.
They made a move, and it's oh, what's I can't the name slipping my mind. The coach,
Mike Schilt.
Schilt, yeah,
he's a putz.
It's him.
Yeah,
it's him. So like when he's gone, I probably won't hate the Cardinals as much anymore.
Yeah, I don't like you very much. It was unnecessary, and their reliever griping about our tomahawk chop was unnecessary too. What is, you should, why didn't you talk about it in May when you came to Atlanta the first time? That was ridiculous. But anyway. Yeah, I don't like the Cardinals either, but I Mets are my number one hated team. And my number one in the NBA that I hate is your favorite team.
No, the greatest team ever?
Well, the Pistons.
The 89.
Bill Laimbeer and all those putzes.
Oh, because they were great. It's I get it.
I hated them.
They hate us because we're the best.
I hated them. It was awful. And poor old Dominique, can he do the best he could against Zeke? Zeke. How do you get Zeke from Isaiah?
I'm not sure.
Is that some biblical thing?
Well, Ezekiel's in the Bible, and Isaiah is too, so probably. Mm-hmm. I think his mom called him that, if I remember correctly. It's been a while.
I called him the groper. That's what happened in New York. Happens a lot in New York, evidently. Right?
This is true.
Okay. I'll never forget passing him. I was at the All-Star game in Atlanta, NBA All-Star game, and I passed him. I'm like, man, I'd be in prison, but I could have absolutely beat the crap out of him right there. He's just, you know. And that was when he was still coaching the Knicks, too. He hadn't been found out about his groping habit. I don't want to make people uncomfortable if they're listening and they're listening to about a groper, but nonetheless, Isaiah Thomas is a groper. How much did they have to pay that woman to get away? Like $20 million, right?
I don't remember.
I mean, James Dolan just wrote her a big old fat check when Zeke, her boy Zeke, was groping her back in New York.
Maybe he gave her one of those rings. He had a couple.
May have. All right, so anyway, Pistons. You know what, Russ? I think the Pistons back in the day when they had those players that you love so much, they may have been my number two, even above and beyond any baseball team, even the Dodgers. Because, man, if we had Dominique Wilkins and Doc Rivers in this room right now talking Hawk stories, I guarantee you a lot of them would be Piston stories. They had some battles in that damn Joe Louis Arena or whatever those things. What was that thing called?
Well, they played in Joe Louis, and then they were in the Silverdome for a
little
while.
Yeah, they were in the Silverdome. That's right.
Yeah.
Awful.
Awful people. Anyway.
$11.6 million, by the way.
That's how much they had to give her.
Jury awards $11.6 million to former Knicks executive.
And Isaiah didn't have to pay a dime of that, did he? Did he pay it or did James Dolan pay it?
I'm not sure. That's a good question. I think he had to.
Oh, really? You think so?
Hang on. I'm finding.
Have you heard him on the NBA TV?
I don't watch. No, NBA TV is terrible.
He's a putz.
I don't watch it.
Yeah, he's.
Yeah, I think he did.
Really?
According to WTHR news article from. It updated, the original article was December 11th, 07, but it was updated April 15th, 2016.
Wow. You ever give her more money?
No, less.
Oh, really? So he hadn't given her the money over the course of 9 years.
Well, it says, Madison Square Garden and Knicks coach Isaiah Thomas have settled a sexual harassment suit filed by a former team executive. The amount of the settlement has not been officially disclosed. However, the Associated Press is reporting Anuncha, I guess that's how you say her name, Brown Sanders, will receive $11.5 million in damages. Sanders,
good for her.
Sanders accused Thomas of Madison Square Garden management of sexual harassment and retaliation. A jury ruled in favor of Sanders 2 months ago. Thomas maintains his innocence.
So why isn't Isaiah like in prison? Assault.
He maintained his innocence. Well, he was. I don't know. I don't know if that might have been a civil case. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, so, but he says he's innocent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, good story. I don't believe you. I'm telling you, worst thing in the history of sports is when he walked down on Michael Jordan when Jordan was beating their butt. Come on, you got to admit that.
Was it worse than when the Celtics walked out on the Pistons?
No.
Because nobody wants to talk about that.
That's right. I want to talk about when Isaiah and Laimbeer and Vinny and Dumars and Aguirre. Who else is the trash players on that team? Did I get them all? Kelly Trebucca. No, Trebucca was traded for Mark Aguirre, right? Isn't that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay. Trash. It's just trash. Awful. Oh, walked out. I mean, But you've seen the 30 for 30 where they talk about that. It's kind of funny.
Oh, it's great.
It's funny. I have to admit that.
I'm glad you finally watched that.
Oh, yeah. It's I just enjoy the part about how Bill Laimbeer and Isaiah got into a fight.
Oh, yeah. That was when, like 92 or 93? Oh, yeah. That's when it all fell apart. It was over at that point. They should have
let him go until they both died. That would have helped humanity. They're awful.
The best part of that 30 for 30 is still the end when Michael Jordan finally admits he wouldn't be anything without the Detroit Pistons.
Yeah, that's right. You're right. That's right.
It's true.
Because he inspired them of that crap they did. But you know what, Russ? Seriously. In the 1980s, and the Hawks were so much fun to watch. Oh, my God. Dominique, Doc Rivers, Tree Rollins, Kevin Willis, who was a beast. I love Kevin Willis. Oh, my God. And I hope we can continue to grow our love for this team now like I had 30 years ago. But, Russ, I'm talking about wars with the Detroit Pistons.
No, every time Detroit played somebody, it was a war.
Oh, my gosh.
Nobody liked them.
Just unbelievable.
The Bad Boys. That was so much fun about it. There's no villain in the NBA now.
There's not. No, there's not. Now, the Hawks may need that at some point down the road. They may need that little edge with them.
I don't know, man. I think that's days gone by. I don't think that exists anymore.
You might be right.
I mean, I even saw a tweet today from Jim Ross, and I know wrestling's not considered a sport by a lot of people, but somebody tweeted something about a pepper being sweet with just a little bit of heat, and he goes, oh, yeah, like villains in wrestling today.
Wow. Did he really?
Yeah, it's true, though. I mean, there's no – who's the bad guy? There's nobody wants to be the bad guy anymore.
You know who the worst bad guy was, in my opinion? Greg Valentine.
Oh, he was good. The Hammer. He was great.
I hated him. Couldn't stand Greg Valentine. Because he was a bad guy now. He was really bad. Yeah, the Hammer. He was rough. All right, we're going to take a break. If you want to join in our conversation as we're just talking sports, sitting around talking sports, what we do every day, 478-646-ESPN. We're talking about the teams we love to hate, like the Saints and the Pistons. Well, I hate the Pistons, but Russ has posters of the Bad Boys in his closet right now.
I actually might. I'd have to go look.
I believe it. Don't bring that trash in here.
And I've got a Grant Hill jersey somewhere.
Oh, my word. You don't.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I do. I was a Pistons fan. Like, it wasn't just the Bad Boys. But the Lindsey Hunter, Joe Dumars. Not Joe Dumars. Lindsey Hunter, Allen Houston, Grant Hill, and that Brian Williams that changed his name to something else.
Yeah, and then he killed somebody.
No, that was somebody different.
Oh, that was a different Jason Williams?
Yeah, yeah.
How much money did Allen Houston get in his career?
About $112 billion. I was making, what, 20 per for the
Knicks? Oh, my God, you're almost right. Russ.
He made a lot of money.
$117.5 million.
There you go.
Oh, my word.
I knew it was a lot.
Wow. For 12 seasons, he made 100, almost 10 million. And this is 25 years ago now. Wow. Wasn't his dad the coach at Tennessee? I think he was.
He may have been. I'm not sure.
He was in a movie. I remember Allen Houston in some movie. I can't remember what it was, but I remember he was in some movie. All right, we're going to take a break. Come back. We got to change the subject. Talking about Saints and Pistons. I want to have.
You're going to be angry walking out of here.
I am. I'm going to be really frustrated. Back with more sports talk and your phone calls right after this.
Now, back to the Bill Shank Show on Middle Georgia's ESPN.
Got a question from our Facebook page, The Bill Shank Show, about another coaching name, Bill Cowher. What about Bill Cowher, Jerry said. Well, here's the problem for me for Bill Cowher. Bill Cowher hasn't coached since 2006. So we talked about the respect factor. Most people are going to think now that he's the guy of the NFL today.
Yeah.
Right?
I think so. Because if you look at his tenure, it was almost like he finally got that Super Bowl, and then he was good. Yeah. Like it's almost as right. if he accomplished what he set out to do and moved on to the next chapter.
Yep. Yeah, he went 11-5 in 2005, second in the NFC North. They went 4-0 in the playoffs, won the Super Bowl, next year 8-8, then he was done. Won 149 games, lost 90, tied 1. So, I'm sure he's a good coach. I don't have any doubt about that, but I'd take McCarthy over him. I would. 478-646-ESPN is our number. Steven in Hawkinsville. Hello.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm all right. Long-time listener. I have a question about the Braves, or a statement, more or less.
Okay.
I see we've signed Markakis again.
Yes.
And Flowers.
Yeah.
And we've offered Donaldson some type of contract that he will probably turn down and just go straight into arbitration or free agency. Are we going to wait till December 23rd before we start signing some bullpen help?
Well, I don't know how much bullpen help they need, because remember they got both Mark Melancon and Shane Green coming back, and I wish they'd get somebody to replace Luke Jackson so he wouldn't have to go through that crap again next year. But I you know, there's a report out today that they are going to go heavy after Madison Bumgarner, which I am not shocked about and I am thrilled about. I hope they'll get the starting pitching situation straightened out pretty quick. They got to deal with Donaldson and know how much money they've got to play with. I mean, if Donaldson leaves, then they're going to have even more to play with, obviously. So I think that's going to be one of the top priorities. But I don't think they're going to wait this year. I mean, look, they've got like $70 million off the books from this year. And if Donaldson does not come back, as I said, they're going to have a lot of that money to play with to help that rotation. And we'll see. But, I mean, I don't think they'll be as patient as they were last year, where they were saying even into April, we can wait until the season starts to get players if we need to. I think they know they need to strengthen that rotation in particular from day one.
Do you think they're going to go after an outfielder?
It might depend on Donaldson. I mean, if they don't get Donaldson back, then they've got to have another power hitter. And they've got to have someone to hit behind Freddie Freeman if he's not going to hit anywhere but third. So do they go after Starling Marte? Do they go after, you know, I'll tell you who I'm going after, Steven. If the Red Sox have Mookie Betts available, I'm calling them tomorrow.
I like the outfielder for the Cardinals. What's his name? Aromas Jr.?
Ozuna?
Ozuna, that's it.
Yeah, the guy who's a free agent. Yeah. Well, I mean, he's a free agent. I don't know what I'd offer him. He's going to get a lot of money. But I mean, Mookie Betts is one of the best players in the game, and if he's on the trade block for the Red Sox, you got to talk to them, don't you?
There's a lot of people talking to him.
Yep. All right, Steven, thank you.
All right.
Thanks. We're going to be in Hawkinsville tomorrow, by the way. Russ and Daniel, by the way, are going to be in Warner Robins tomorrow for the midday show with our friend Ken McCall at McCall Sandwich Shop. Don't let him give you none of that chocolate cake now.
Yeah, that's a good point. Gotta
be careful about that.
Yeah, I gotta think about the menu there.
Yeah.
Soups, man. Yeah. God, I'm going soup.
Yeah. And then we're gonna be in Hawkinsville at the steakhouse in Hawkinsville. Oh my God. Lewis Fowler, look out, brother. We're coming. Me and Russ both are eating plenty of meat. We're no carbon, so none of that great macaroni and cheese that Lewis has.
That's all right, because you know what? With the meat and veggies are all I need.
I just want a plate full of scrimps.
You know, what about that sausage?
Oh, man, that sausage.
Ooh.
Oh, dude, that's right. I forgot about that. Oh, now, my God.
Lewis knows our little situation, right?
Like, yes, because he saw me the other day.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
No cake, no, like that.
None of that chocolate delight he's got on that daggum buffet over there.
Yeah, it's so gross
anyway. Oh, Lord.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. We just want...
It's going to be tough.
Plate full of scrimps. We can deal with that.
Yeah, and you get a plate full of shrimp, I'll get a plate full of sausage. We'll be good.
Okay. No, those two things are good on our diet. We'll be good. And, I mean, he's going to have fried chicken. He'll have something good for us. You know he's going to do something.
Oh, yeah. Everything there.
I can't wait. We hadn't been there in a while because we have obviously been with our remote equipment, getting everything set and everything. So we're really anxious to be down there tomorrow at the steakhouse in Hawkinsville. We'll hope you'll come by and see us. And, you know, they usually have the buffet on Thursdays starting at 4:30. So we hope you'll drive to Hawkinsville. If you're in Warner Robins, drive to Hawkinsville and join us for a little dinner. Well, we always have a good time with Lewis, and he was fun the other day. He was all decked out in his black and red. He was ready to rock and roll on Saturday, so he was having a good time. But no, we can't wait for that. We'll be in Hawkinsville tomorrow. I got to go down there for a meeting, so I might like eat twice. I might. We got to meet. We have a little powwow. Hope I didn't offend anybody by using that American Indian term. They'll be picketing outside the steakhouse in Hawkinsville tomorrow because I said
we're good.
Powwow.
I think we're all right.
You think we're okay?
I think we'll be fine.
They're the Red Devils, so I think we're okay there, don't
Ooh.
You? Yeah, I know.
It's offensive to Red Devils.
What do you give up for Mookie Betts?
Ooh. Are we signing pitching prospect? I mean, free agent pitchers?
Yes.
Okay. If we're getting two free agent pitchers, they can have almost anything. Almost anything. They can have Pache or Waters, one or the other.
Yeah, got to be one of those.
They can have a pitching prospect.
Oh, Folty.
They can definitely have Folty. they can have him. Yeah, I would say, yeah, a pitching so Pache or Waters, a pitching prospect, and then whatever else they want, a Folty, Ender, something like that, you just let me know.
How about this? Pache or Waters, Folty or Newcomb, Wright or Wilson?
Yeah, I'd do that.
How about that trio right there?
I like it.
Make your pick. That's a pretty good deal right there, though.
You know? I think so. I would do that.
We'll even give you Ender Inciarte.
I think Boston would do that, too, because if he wants to be a free agent and doesn't want to be in Boston anymore, then you get something for him, right?
Absolutely. I mean, they'd get a starting outfielder, either Waters or Pache. They'd get two pitchers. And Russ, they, you know, and Rick Porcello is another free agent pitcher to keep an eye on. But they're losing Porcello. There's talk they may trade David Price. Somebody asked me that this morning. Would I be okay if the Braves traded for David Price and Andrew Benintendi? And the answer was, yeah. Yeah, I'll take David Price. He didn't work out in Boston, but I'll take him. But I'll take Mookie Betts. I mean, look, again, I'm going to say this for a while, I think, until we know where Mookie Betts is going. And, you know, Mookie was born in Nashville. Mookie Betts is one of the best players in the game.
Yeah.
Put him with Acuna, holy crap, man.
That's the thing. It's when you get a chance to get one of the best in the game, and also, too, with Acuna and Betts, I mean, those two can bat anywhere in the batting order. They're going to be really good defensively. I hate to part ways with such good outfield prospects, but, I mean, Mookie Betts is one of the best players in baseball and plays in the outfield. They'd have to sign him long-term to really make it work, but I'd love that.
I'd love it, too. He's a great player. All right, 478-646-ESPN. One more segment with phone calls. We'd love to hear you as we talk sports here on The Bill Shank Show.